Court is now in session. The Honorable Chief Justice Annette Kingsley Ziegler presiding. Your silence is commanded.
Good morning. We are here for Colectivo Coffee Roasters, Inc., Society Insurance, 21AP 463. Could I have counsel's appearances, please? Has she been admitted pro hoc vice?
Yes, she appears pro hoc vice.
Okay, and has been admitted?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Jay Durbin of Urban Taylor, and I, together with my pro hoc vice counsel, Rachel Schulte, and Steve Magnese, represent the Connecticut Bar Association, and Connecticut Bar Association in the case, Colectivo, Coffee Roasters, and the restaurant, and several others. All guests.
All right. Thank you. Good morning. The lineup is 25 minutes followed by 30 and 5 minutes in rebuttal, correct? All right. And before you begin, I just want to say hello to the School District of Loyal from Clark County, Wisconsin. If you could stand up, please. We have a good courtroom here this morning.
Oh, wow.
All right. Okay. If time permits, I'm going to meet with you for a few minutes after oral argument this morning. We can't talk about the merits of the case, but we certainly can talk about anything that's on your mind other than that. So if it works, I'll be out to talk with you. Anyone who wants to can come in. This isn't just for the school. On the other hand, if it doesn't work for you, let me know that, too, or let the marshal know. All right? Okay. All right. Go ahead and have a seat. Let's proceed, then, with oral argument.
And thank you for the opportunity to appear. Under a commercial property policy, Colectivo and others seek to recover business income losses incurred as a result of social distancing orders, limiting Wisconsin restaurants to takeout and food delivery. This court accepted a bypass petition to review whether the trial court properly refused to dismiss this suit for failure to state a claim. Plaintiff sued under society's commercial property insurance policy, which covers direct physical loss of or damage to buildings and personal property, and will pay business income or an extra expense for what's called a period of restoration, beginning after the direct physical loss of or damage to the premises is sustained, and ending when the property should be repaired, rebuilt, or replaced with reasonable speed, or when the business is resumed at a new permanent location. Society will also pay for business income and extra expense in two other limited circumstances that I will discuss later. First, as a threshold matter, this court must decide the meaning of direct physical loss of or property in the society property insurance policy. As the Sixth Circuit said in the Santos opinion, direct physical loss and direct physical damage is the North Star of commercial property insurance. Colectivo claims it meets the requirement of direct physical loss of and damage to property due to the effect of the government's social distancing orders and due to the virus's presence at or around its premises. Both theories fail. While society is not unsympathetic to the challenges restaurants have faced during the pandemic, it is a property insurer and cannot be called upon to fund all business losses. Society and the court must be guided by the terms of the property policy that the parties entered. And there are four key points why there has been no direct fiscal loss of property. First, plaintiffs make no claim to recover for direct physical loss or damage to covered property. There's no claim for loss or damage to tables, chairs, kitchenware, the roof, the floors, the doors. What plaintiffs want to recover is their income stream, the diminished operation of their business. Second, the partial temporary limitation of Colectivo's business operations imposed by the social distancing orders was not a physical loss or physical change as a matter of law. It was similar to a change in zoning that alters the hours a business can be open or a reduction in business capacity, not a physical change in the building. The actual or suspected presence of the virus on the property did not cause a direct physical loss or damage because it didn't physically alter the property. The virus could be removed with cleaning agents, and Colectivo's office losses were at most economic, not a direct physical loss or damage. And fourth, the period of restoration, providing that business income or extra expense will be paid only until the property can be repaired, rebuilt, or replaced, is further evidence that physical loss or damage requires a tangible change in the property, requiring it to be repaired, rebuilt, or replaced.
Council, how do you make sense of the case out of the Northern District of Illinois, which was very similar to this case, involving similar policy language, similar period of restoration language? I'm talking about society insurance, COVID-19 business interruption protection insurance litigation case, F21 F sub 3rd 729, and they went through the analysis, but they reached a different conclusion than you're arguing to us. So how do you reconcile that case?
Your Honor, in that case, the court seemed to suggest that because the property had physical characteristics, a loss of use of the property met the requirement of direct physical loss or damage to property. That argument, that loss of use of the property, somehow was a physical loss, has been rejected by over 700 courts who have ruled for the insurer on this issue. This includes the federal appellate courts from the 2nd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th circuits, and federal court and state courts of appeals in 6 states. In fact, not a single appellate court has come out the other way, and there has not been a single dissent in any of those rulings.
Were those cases involving policy language similar to this? Because I know in reading this case that it was almost identical to this case. So you're saying all those cases you're referring to involved policy language with the language physical loss or damage and also that period of restoration language?
Your Honor, the language of physical loss or damage has very slight changes in it. Some of those cases involve literally the words physical loss or damage to, and some involve the exact language of the society policy, physical loss of or damage to property, and they all involve the restoration language. The Seventh Circuit, in a series of decisions, addressed both of those variations of the language. The first was addressed in a case called Sandy Point, and the second, the exact language of the society policy, was addressed in a case called Bradley Hill. The Bradley case is our language, precisely. There is also a recent case from the Illinois Court of Appeals, the Sweetberry case, that applies the precise language of the society policy. It's a society case as well.
Thank you.
Your Honor. And all the indicia are in Wisconsin that the law points in this same. Wisconsin courts have long recognized that physical injury or damage to the property, physical requires physical injury or damage to the property. Loss of use is not enough. And that same reasoning has been applied under Wisconsin law to cases like this one. State court rulings such as Circolo in Dane County, Al Johnson's in Door County, Classy Glass in the federal court in the Western District of Wisconsin, Built Right Furniture in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, held direct physical loss unambiguously requires actual physical damage to the insured premises. And here there is none.
One of my concerns about defining it as actual physical damage is that it seems to render superfluous the policy language that gives an alternative, loss or damage. Can you address that, please?
Yes, Your Honor. Colectivo makes that argument, that direct physical loss must mean something other than direct physical damage. And society agrees. Loss means theft. Missing property is lost. Or it means total loss of property, and the property is completely destroyed. Damage is harm or injury to property.
And is loss of space in a dining facility loss?
It may be loss, but it's not direct physical loss.
Well, what is meant by physical? One definition of physical, and there are lots of definitions, but let me pull this one out, tangible, because that's one that resonates with me. If you don't like it, you can tell me why. So, loss of dining use seems to be something you can see, something that is tangible, loss of use of dining area. Push back on that, because I'm having problems with that.
Yeah, I don't think that the loss is physical. What's physical is the fact that the property is a physical space. We know that. But the loss itself is not physical. It's a loss of use. That is not a physical loss of the building. The building isn't gone. It remains there in the same way it was prior to this event. Similarly, the building isn't damaged. It remains in the same state as it was prior to the event. There's no repair. There's no replace of the building that's required.
How is economic loss typically dealt with, if at all, in insurance policies like this one?
Your Honor, economic loss qua economic loss is not insured. What is insured is actual physical damage or loss of property, and then there is a supplementary coverage that is dependent on the finding that there is physical loss or damage to property that covers suspension of the business during the time that the property is being repaired, and in that aspect, business income is covered, but only during the time the property is being repaired and only as an adjunct to an initial threshold finding of actual physical damage or loss to the property. Economic loss in and of itself is not something insured by the policy. And that makes sense. Insurers can't protect a business against all the vicissitudes of business operation. The policy is very clear about what it does cover and what it does not cover, and that requirement of direct physical loss or damage is central to what commercial property policies are all about. I mentioned that society's policy has two other places where it covers business income, loss of business income. And those are when there has been damage to property other than the insured's premises and access to the area immediately surrounding that damaged property is prohibited by civil authority. And when contamination, which is defined in the policy as a defect, deficiency, or dangerous condition in the insured's products, merchandise, or premises, results in a government action prohibiting access to the insured's premises. Neither of those are applicable here. First, civil authority coverage. It's triggered when there's been damage to a specific property nearby, not the insured's property, but another specific premises, that led to a civil authority order prohibiting access to the immediate vicinity, including the policyholder's premises. Here, we have no allegation of a specific off-premises property that's been damaged. There's no attempt to identify a specific property near Colectivo where the premises suffered property damage. And the governor's orders and the order of the secretary designee of the Department of Health didn't bar access to any specific local area surrounding a property near the insured's business. They required people to stay at home to stop the spread of the virus and imposed a limitation on in-person dining generally. And also, there was never an order prohibiting access to the policyholder's premises. And that's key, because prohibit is a very clear word that means forbid, to forbid by authority, to prevent from doing something. It means to ban completely. If smoking is prohibited, you cannot smoke. If access is prohibited, you cannot access the premises. Here, we know Colectivo and the other premises and the other plaintiffs could access their premises and did. They offered takeout services. They prepared food. Their staff and employees went to their places of employment and conducted delivery and takeout services. Customers also could place orders and pick up food at the restaurant. It was simply a restriction on dine-in services. Society's contamination coverage, the other aspect where there is a limited business income coverage, is also not applicable. Coverage M, the contamination coverage, addresses situations such as a foreign illness at a specific location. It doesn't apply here. This is not a case where a health department ordered a restaurant to stop serving food because there was E. coli in its lettuce. For plaintiffs to have coverage, their operations must have been suspended due to contamination at their own premises. The policy requires the contamination be in the insured's, your product, merchandise, or premises. Not anywhere in the world, not in the public domain, the insured's product or premises. And to receive business income or extra expense, the contamination in the insured's premises or product must have resulted in a government action that prohibits access to the insured's premises. Again, we don't have that here either. The governor's orders and the secretary designee's order mentioned no specific business. They were not entered as a result of a condition on Colectivo's premises or with its product. And they were ordered, again, to promote social distancing throughout Wisconsin. They prohibited all restaurants from offering on-premises dining, whether or not the virus was on their specific premises. These plaintiffs had to stop offering dine-in services because they were restaurants, not because anything was wrong with their specific premises or product. And in fact, in the complaint at paragraph 131, Colectivo says it does not seek any determination of whether the coronavirus was physically in the insured premises. So we know it can't meet that aspect of the contamination coverage. And that allegation is restated as if set forth in full in every count of the complaint. This case is not and never was about contamination at surfaces at a particular restaurant requiring suspension of operations. And here, as long as the governor's order was in effect, no restaurant could offer on-premises dining. And the contamination coverage also requires that a government authority prohibits access to the insured premises. Again, that didn't happen here. Restaurants were encouraged to serve food for takeout and delivery. Employees were allowed on their premises to prepare and sell food, and customers were allowed to go into the premises to buy it. The orders were a limitation of use. They were not a prohibition of access or a prohibition of production of a product. The meaning of prohibit is clear, and as numerous courts have recognized, the governmental orders were restrictions on use. There was no order prohibiting access, either under civil authority, contamination, or otherwise. And the Illinois Court of Appeals also just addressed a claim like this one under society's contamination coverage in a case called Alley 64. Alley 64 was decided after we submitted our supplemental authority, so it's a very recent decision. And that court found no coverage for exactly the reasons that I've expressed, that Just as in the case here, the insured did not suspend its operations due to actual contamination, much less that the cause of its suspended operations was actual contamination on its own premises. And there were no allegations that contamination of its premises resulted in a government order prohibiting access to the insured's premises or production of its property, of its product. Just as here, the insured was allowed and encouraged to use its premises to prepare food for takeout and delivery, and the prerequisites of those coverages simply were not met. So that brings us back to the first question about physical damage or physical loss. And in Wisconsin, the courts have long recognized that the word physical requires physical injury or damage to the property. And cases like Wisconsin Label. And that same reasoning is what has been implied in this case and in cases like this across the country, where so many courts overwhelmingly have found no coverage. I mentioned another Illinois decision, Sweetberry versus Society, involving Society's policy language, the precise policy language here. You know, Wisconsin is not an outlier. The rules of policy construction are similar to those of Illinois or to the other states in which 700 other decisions have been reached on the same point. If you have the same policy and the same policy language and you live in Illinois or Wisconsin or Ohio, the terms are likely going to mean the same thing. And the fundamental problem here is that the businesses cannot satisfy is the policy's plain requirement that the loss or damage be physical. We also would submit that were coverage somehow to be found under those provisions, there are exclusions in the policy that would apply. There is an exclusion for loss of use and for loss of market. And that's also telling because it reinforces that physical loss cannot mean loss of use, and that loss of use is not something covered by the policy. The policy ensures building and the personal property of the policyholder against a loss or damage. Unless the court has other questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal, and thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Urban?
So I'm proud to represent businesses in the bar and restaurant space that are very unique and dear to Wisconsin. From our supper clubs, I was just at the Schwartz Supper Club in St. Anne over the weekend. It was reopened and robust and in full operation. And from a coffee roaster like Colectivo that has a cafe off the square, the Tandem Restaurant, which serves a very unique area to Milwaukee and is a very special place in providing a food time sometimes to indigent folks. And these businesses operate in space, in air. Society would have you read these policies as if they operate in some type of vacuum. Air has particles. Air is property. The property of a restaurant can go from place to place, and they can lease a new space and still be operating to make income. But how their business makes income is very, very different. You can't flip the switch on a supper club to do takeout overnight. And Society is correct that these losses are defined for a fixed or a short period of time. By the time that they could rebound and so forth, they could operate. But the taverns, the supper clubs, the restaurants, the cafes of this state, that's who Society marketed to. Society specially wrote, this is a great insurance policy. It's a hometown, homegrown insurance policy. They don't follow the ISO language. For someone to come into this room and suggest that 700 cases somehow have evaluated this language just isn't true, and I'll get to that. It's not true at all. This is a very individual, unique policy. And you know why the restaurants and bars wanted it? Because it's great. It's a perfect policy to provide for an incident like this. In fact, they didn't modify the policy after SARS like most of the other insurance policies in America did. They put a virus exclusion in. This policy specifically didn't have a virus policy. No wonder the agents sold it so much. No wonder the Tavern League endorsed it. No wonder the Wisconsin Restaurant Association endorsed it. Both of them wrote amicus briefs supporting our position on the policy. The Tavern League is a very important organization for our state, as is the Restaurant Association, and they relied on society to write this special coverage to cover their operations, not just the use, if their income would be disrupted. Most folks will tell you that are in the bar and restaurant space, and I made my living before I was a lawyer in that space, put myself through law school working in that space. I know what you sell at a restaurant. Your income is driven by your personality, what music you play, you know, not just the table that you have. That's certainly part of it. And this is a virus, by the way, that regardless of what you think about it and regardless of what you think about Governor Evers' order, is everywhere. Every single place has the virus. It's invisible, too. So even though policies like this would provide coverage for smoke, you can at least sometimes see smoke or the loss. Color is the property. Here it's an invisible loss. But it doesn't mean that it's any less physical. For example, there's a line of cases that covers cat urine at these kind of policies when you can't see it. So this is a very, very special policy, and the reason that we request the bypass is because you're the court that decides this, not the Illinois court. These are the same lawyers that went to the MDL that Justice Dallet asked the question about and got a different result. So they're here now. They are the same lawyers. The other two states are intermediate appellate courts. That is not what I would consider authority on this language. You folks are the authority on this language. This is a homegrown policy that they wanted to be driven by a Wisconsin judiciary and the justices of this court to interpret. Because you know what they didn't do? They didn't define it.
So talk to me about the language in the policy that's homegrown and different from the 700 cases. I want to point to me what it is they didn't fix.
So two things. First, globally, the entire clause of contamination. That is an additional coverage that society wrote specifically for restaurants and bars. That's where they sell this. That's who they sell this policy to. Bless you. That is homegrown, a contamination by a virus, and they didn't put a virus exclusion there. Why didn't they put a virus exclusion? Because they wanted to cover contamination. That's why I said it's the perfect policy.
So the other, I'm just trying to track completely
yep.
the language
yep.
of the policy.
And then the other
so
language.
The other policies say this exclude, what's the language they have that this doesn't?
Well, the entire clause of the contamination clause is not in these other policies, other than the Sweetberry decision, okay? And then the policy language under the loss. First of all, it's an all-risk policy, so that means it covers all risks unless excluded. A direct physical...
Where does the policy say that, counsel, that all risks are covered unless excluded? Can you direct me to the policy?
It's just generally in the term of these policies, they call it a quote-unquote all-risk policy. That's the vernacular.
But there's nothing in this policy saying that it covers all risks unless excluded.
Any way that property can be damaged is covered unless it's defined or limited.
Where is the provision in the policy that says so?
I'm just using the term to describe it all risk. The grant of coverage saying we will pay for physical damage, and this is the quote that I want to get to, is what they're going to pay for, a direct physical loss of or disjunctive damage to a covered property. What society is leaving out of its argument to you folks are the words of and to. The of and to language, Justice Stegler, are the words that aren't in those other cases. There has been no Supreme Court, state Supreme Court, who has the sole authority for this. There has been no state Supreme Court that has interpreted loss of or damage to. In fact, what the Sweetberry decision had to do
okay,
is...
Take me right back to where it is in the policy that you're saying of and to...
The definition is a direct physical loss. Oh, you want the actual page number? I'd have to go mark it. But it's been conceded that it's a direct physical loss or damage to the covered property.
Counsel, I think it's page one of 32 of the policy.
I don't want to get the magistrate mad at me, and I'm not supposed to leave this microphone, so I apologize.
It's under the coverage section, the first sentence.
Thank you.
We don't get mad that easily.
So it's page 1 of 32, coverage, sub A. We'll pay for direct physical loss of or damage to covered property at the premises preside.
Okay, so the of and to language is what saves you, and the contamination clause.
Well, I don't think they save me. This is the coverage that society wanted to write for these bars and restaurants.
Okay, well, take out the save me or whatever you want. Your mm-hmm. argument is that those are the difference makers here, and that's why you win.
Those are the differences. And then the other reason, too, is the reason that they chose, knowing that there were viruses in this world, not to exclude anything for virus.
But there has to be an initial grant of coverage, so your argument does depend on how we interpret direct physical loss of or damage to property, correct?
It does on the property damage part. It does not on the contamination clause.
And contamination clause requires that access be prohibited. Access was not prohibited. You must concede that, right? Because the owners of the restaurants, their employees, all had access to the property, and there was nothing in the shutdown orders that prohibited those employees or owners from accessing the property. And in fact, many did access their property, and they offered takeout service to consumers to replace the fact that they could not provide dine-in coverage.
Thank you, Justice Bradley. The restaurateurs that we represent, or the bar owners, would indicate to you that access to provides that they have access to being able to operate in their spaces. That's the access that was deprived of.
But that's not what the policy says. The policy says prohibits access to the described premises. And there was no prohibition on access to the premises, correct?
Then why doesn't, well, can somebody unlock the door? I suppose if somebody wasn't live with COVID on the property and so forth, could a restaurant owner go into the restaurant and clean the tables and something like that? They could do that, but they couldn't operate their property in the same way.
But they could offer takeout service, right? Nothing in the government order prohibited that.
You know, I'm not so sure that a bar can do takeout. I think those rules are changing, but I don't think you can make a cocktail and carry it down the street. So I don't think
they were doing that in Milwaukee, but...
The reason I hedged is because I actually have an office and grew up in Toma, and so the local supper club there was the teepee owned by Ed Thompson, the brother of our former mayor, or I'm sorry, governor, and they would tell you that that's where they make all their money. So it's a business income policy, and you make it on the selling of the drinks. And so I don't think you can, there's everything that you can take out, and then having worked in places, there's certain things that just aren't portable. You know, I mean, it's not McDonald's. And they're not writing policies just for something that you can get through a window. Part of a restaurant is the experience, and if you look at the contamination coverage, it's more than access. Like I said, does not require just that you can get into it.
Mr. Urban, can you address the exclusion for delay, loss of use, or loss of market, and how that affects your argument? It's hard to not characterize what you're arguing as loss of use, and it's hard to then not read this as saying it's not covered.
Well, when you can't make it's not loss of use necessarily that's the coverage per se. If you can't use it to make an income, that's what's covered for that period of time.
Well, how does that differ from an exclusion for consequential losses, which include loss of use? Because here the argument is you could physically go into the space because the space wasn't, you weren't barred from actually walking into it. You could physically go in it. Perhaps people could use the kitchens to make takeout, but what you're really arguing is loss of the ability to use it the way you had used it before. So how am I push back on that?
Well, I don't want to necessarily push back. I just would say that use is in... I'm using my mouth to speak here and so forth. Restaurants and bars need to use their premises to derive an income. So the use, I think, is embedded in that.
Right, and it's not covered according to the we will not pay for loss or damage caused by or resulting from loss of use.
But if you can't, it is covering an interruption either based on direct, like I said.
Right, once that physical loss has been found, it then covers the
direct the business interruption. So you're saying because physical loss is because you meet that definition, that then it kicks in for the interruption.
Yes.
Interruption. Okay.
I want to go back to the contamination clause. Do you have that in front of you? In contamination clause is section M2A is what I'm looking at, and that prohibits access to the described premises or production of your product. Now, you gave an example about the supper club in Toma, with which I am familiar, described the inability to have carry out alcohol. How does that fit in with the language set forth in 2A that is that prohibits the production of your product? Does that fit in at all?
Well, I think it does, and that's what I'm sort of talking about, is that when you're a supper club is producing ambiance, a supper club is producing socialization. I mean, we're members of the bar, but before we were ever members of the bar, I think we tried cases before literally bars, and judges stood behind the bar and rode the circuit in taverns and so forth. So this is something that's historical that we understand about the production of the product. It's not just a sandwich that you can take. I mean, and I'll tell you what. There are cases that we didn't take. You know, like if a place is a pizza delivery place, then they haven't deprived of a loss. What society is trying to suggest is because you weren't damaged enough, or some people weren't damaged, then other people might not be. I mean, that's something for the trial courts to figure out how much damage there was, or what was it about this that goes to the amount of the loss. It doesn't, and nothing in the policy actually requires a total loss or total destruction. You know, if there was smoke damage, for example, they would be covered. If there was cat urine and odor, that would be covered. So the virus is what it is. But if anything about either the direct loss of or damage to the property,
would the smoke or cat urine garner coverage if it didn't damage property?
Well, that's why I'm saying the property is the elements around the property as well. The air is a property, and there is Wisconsin law on that I was going to get to.
Not just the air.
Well, it's the environment.
In those instances, isn't it property that's affected by the smoke or the urine that is so permeated that it is damaged to the property?
I would argue that
rather than just the smell that could come in or out, it's part of the air, it's fluid. It's really that it's permeated the property that creates that. So for me anyway, that doesn't get you there. So I need a better argument than
well,
that.
The cases that Wisconsin has considered before have got us there. And they're cited in the amicus briefs, for example. They're cited in our briefs that the environs around the property is something that is covered. So there could be table loss. Of course there could be table losses. If the earthquake, for example. I mean, I'm told that we don't have earthquakes in Wisconsin, but anyway, if there are states that there certainly are. It's the production of the services that lead to the income that's what's affected for that period of time. So where I left off before the questions was about obviously we know the four corners rules and so forth and what we've pled, and that's the context that we're here. We're here in the context that, you know, if you're going to define these terms, which they haven't, then you can make ordinary reasoning from them about the production of spaces and things like that. And when I say that it's unique homegrown policy, I mean it's not an ISO form. It's, if you look at the bottom, the language is copyrighted by Society Insurance. So they wrote it themselves. To provide this, and then they don't define those very terms that you asked me to talk about. They don't define those things. So at best they're ambiguous in describing their operations and so forth.
And if they're ambiguous, then we find in the favor of the insured.
Right, and we've done both. We've provided dictionary definitions for some of these terms, with the twos and the fours being very important, and the ors. And like I said, but coupled with, you know, there being no virus exclusion at all. So the MDL case is on, it's not authoritative to you, it's suggestive to you if you'd like. But of the federal courts that have decided this issue, they didn't decide this specific language other than the MDL, which is the same set of attorneys. And I was not aware of the Alley 64 case, but the Sweet Berry Cafe, I would argue that these folks, just like the MUA decision out of North Dakota, I mean, in some of these other insurance case law, they should have deferred those decisions and certified the question to you folks to be able to make a determination on those types of issues. And so you're the court that would then be required to determine what physical injury to or destruction of property means. The amicus briefing had some good points, and we didn't, you know, the case came up, the briefing had already been done for the Court of Appeals, of course, and said, and so, for example, the Tavern League points out quite, you know, accurately that noxious fumes or a microscopic but deadly virus is loss or damage in the same and is equally insurable. And they cite the quality molding case from the Seventh Circuit. It's when the property is rendered unfit for use, it has a physical loss or damage component for 60 years. And so, for example, the Tavern League policy points out those situations for 60 years. That's where I came to the cat urine example, for example, because that one just jumps out. But there's wildfire smoke as well.
But in this case, the premises were not unfit for use because they were being used. The restaurant owners and their employees were in the restaurants, many of them, preparing food and drinks, depending on location, apparently, for takeout service. So the premises were not unfit for use, right?
Well Justice Bradley, the not everybody did takeout. So the people that we represent, you know, couldn't. I mean, maybe they could later on, in a month after they retooled and they had people that didn't have COVID and all these kinds of other things. But, you know, this is back in March of 2020. We know very little about what we're talking about on the virus now, but, you know, we didn't know much back then. And so that's what these policies are to cover then. It's not just structural damage. I mean, definitely there would be structural damage, but instead what society is asking the courts to do is revise the terms of the policy after the fact. And so going back to the Kramer's Urban case, no relation.
Before you do that, let's talk a little bit about the period of restoration, because that terminology and that provision is very important for defining the period during which there would be business income coverage. And that policy provision says it it ends on the earlier of the date when the property at the described premises should be repaired, rebuilt, or replaced, or the date when the business is resumed at a new permanent location. So if, in fact, the premises were unfit for use, there would be something that would need to happen at the premises. They needed to be repaired, rebuilt, or replaced. How does that fit in the context of COVID when you were just arguing that perhaps some of the places could not offer takeout service because their employees had COVID? That suggests that the virus affected the people, but it did not affect the place in a physical manner that would require rebuilding, repairing, replacement, or opening at a new location. None of that fits, does it?
Well, that's why I mentioned that in March of 2020, we didn't know. We knew that airborne was an issue, but as far as surface contamination, I don't know that in March of 2020 that we knew what was making these properties unfit and these spaces unfit. We didn't know about, what type of HVAC needed to be done, that kind of thing. They call it novel coronavirus for a reason. It's new. Whatever you think about it, whatever you think about the orders. So the policy restoration period, that's a measure of damages. And we concede that there are going to be plaintiffs that do not qualify for any coverage. There's going to be other things that we're able to, other people that were able to restore their property. Where I mainly live, in the neighboring properties, people got permits to operate outside. They have these little igloos or greenhouses and so forth, like Lakefront Brewery, put up these, like, they look like mini greenhouses. I'm sure everybody's seen them. Another business that we represent has domes on a rooftop. And so that's what they did to try to restore their property. Property is more, what I'm trying to say, what the Tavern League has written, what the policy, what the Restaurant Association has written, and what Kramer's Urban is holding for is that in hindsight, you can't rewrite a policy to say, oh, we only meant tables and chairs. They didn't, that property includes all these other things. The insurance companies have long admitted that rendering a property unfit for its intended use caused physical loss or damage. And there's a whole line of cases cited not only in our brief, but also in the brief of the Tavern League that I thought was very, very well done. And these are pre-COVID cases. I mean, you can just go through the list of them. Radon dust and gas, gasoline vapors, vibration. We have construction near our office, and they've had to put in a vibration meter to determine if their foundation is safe. And if we had, you know, our business income was in, it hasn't happened, thank God, but if it would be affected, that would affect our ability to earn income potentially and reside in a claim. Risk of collapse. The closest case to consider similar language is the Manpower case out of the Eastern District, and that was damaged, you know, next to. So if you look at the Manpower decision, which is, again, not binding or anything like that, the judge in that case rejected the argument that apparel must physically damage property in order to cause a covered loss. As noted, the policy covered physical losses in addition to physical damage. If a physical loss could not occur without physical damage, then the policy would contain surplus language. And so that there's all sorts of ways that a property can be impeded and stuck in its asbestos, for example, on a property. Yes, there's a physical part, bacteria, E. coli, spiders, drywall. And so all of these things have been determined as what is a loss.
Those losses, counsel, would also preclude, presumably, the owner and his or her employees from being present on the premises, right? And that's not the case with COVID.
Well, then I would suggest that how does one remediate the premises if you don't have access to it? So somebody can go in there, but you sure as heck can't serve customers because you can't get them sick. I mean, that would be horrible. I mean, if we were doing something that was unsafe to get somebody ill, so while those things are going on, until you can restore your property, that's what these policies are designed to protect. And so the Wisconsin court has recognized, and I'm now citing from the United Policyholders amicus brief, written by local lawyer at Quarles and Brady, Patrick Murphy, but he cites at page one of his brief, right out of the bat, this court has recognized that real property includes a three-dimensional property interest in airspace, bounded by the length and the width of the person's land holdings, and rises up approximately to the height of the government safe altitude of flight. So this is even in space. That's the Brenner case, 2012, WIS 98. The airspace within the boundaries is part of real property that's susceptible to physical damage. So this is the air particles that do that. The society policy, by the way, doesn't exclude air. I mean, we're having a discussion about these policies in space. Like I said, not in a vacuum, not in a hermetically sealed.
Counsel, we still have COVID with us. In fact, there's a resurgence right now, and on the East Coast, there are additional measures being taken that are similar to what has happened over the last 2 years. So COVID continues to be with us, and yet businesses are operating. People are going to restaurants. It really was the government shutdown order that put businesses in the position that they were in at the onset of COVID. It isn't the virus, because the virus hasn't left us. It's still out in force.
Well, in this case, it's a combination of it. That's true. And the virus hasn't left us. That's also true. But the coverage runs out. This is not like when I was talking about how I would explain the case in insurance, and one of the students before you came in even mentioned, oh, this is going to be an exciting case about insurance. Insurance, this isn't a long-term disability policy for the owner of the business because that person suffered COVID. One of my favorite supper clubs in Milwaukee, the Jackson Grill, the owner did die and is not going to reopen now. Very sad about that. But it doesn't cover his death. That property shut down because he died. Even if he died from COVID, which I'm not trying to suggest that he did, that's not this kind of policy. This policy had to do with that period of time, and while the restaurant, if a restaurant could retool and do takeout and so forth and open, it's not covered forever. You're right. We're all coping with COVID.
It's covered until the date that the property should be repaired, rebuilt, or replaced. So what occurred in the way of repair, rebuilding, or replacement that allowed restaurants to reopen? It wasn't repair, rebuilding, or replacement. It was the lifting of the government's shutdown orders, right?
Well, those are damages questions that aren't before us yet because we're up here on a motion to dismiss right now, so we haven't gotten to that. But
look at whether you state a claim or not, right?
Correct. And what the claim that we've stated has to do with the fact that, you know, they could retool. Some of them could. Some of them closed. I mean, the Restaurant Association in their brief cited all the damage there has been to this industry, billions of dollars, probably the hardest hit industry of all the industries. And so I can't, without myself owning a bar or restaurant, concede that everybody has been able to retool. No, it still does affect folks.
It's not about the retool. I guess what I'm asking is specifically what has been done, what could be done in the context of a virus that persists, that is still among us, that is still, under your argument, in the air of every restaurant potentially. What was done within the period of restoration to repair, rebuild, or replace that enabled the restaurants to reopen?
Okay, well, one of the things is, for example, I was one of the few lawyers that actually tried a test case in Milwaukee during COVID, and what I can tell the courthouse is they had to erect different structures, plexiglass. It was like trying a case in a hockey rink. People were wearing masks and so forth. There's all sorts of things that people were doing to try to be able to restore their operations.
But if the government shutdown order had been in place, none of that would have mattered, right? And your clients still would have had losses.
Well, that's true. I mean, they have to follow the rules. And so I'm not aware of any of my clients that were breaking the rules and opening up before the shutdown order. I think this court struck it down. And so that definitely contributed to the situation. But there were other situations we would go to get even takeout from a place, for example, and they would have a sign on the door when we got there saying, you know, our chef got COVID. We don't have any food today. You know, so these losses do continue, but this policy, like I said, is not a long-term disability policy. It's more of a short-term disability policy. That's the way that you really look at it. It's supposed to bridge the situation. It's a short-term situation. Even though COVID is with us long-term, it's not a long-term. I imagine that other policies you could, I don't know, perhaps, but I'm told, like the LA Lakers, for example, had a long-term business interruption policy. I'm told that there was a specialized risk like that, but I don't want to, you know, get too much into outside factors. I'd rather concentrate on the case here, which is what society sold to these restaurateurs and bartenders and bar owners and mom and pops or corporate chains, whatever, is what they sold, is that if you have this type of interruption, because of including air, as this court has already determined, in the spaces in which you operate, if you have it, this will provide a little bit of income for you in exchange for premium until you can get back on your feet. If they can't get back on their feet just because COVID's still around, like the rest of us, I'm still suffering effects of it in my own business operations and so forth. I think we all are. But there's no coverage for that, right? It's only a temporary period of time. We concede that. We concede that it's a temporary period of time. And so I would encourage you, if you're looking at if the stop on physical loss and damage and things like that is a stop, like I said, we got the briefing ended for us, maybe before a lot of these arguments were developed because of where it was in the status of the case, and the petition to bypass was by us. And so we knew we were going to be precluded to some extent in just relying on oral argument in addition to the supplementation. Thank you. Thank you.
I wanted to let you finish your thought. I didn't want to. You were on a roll.
I saw red.
I wanted to. But I wasn't seeing where the period was coming. Thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor. First and most fundamentally, society issued a property policy. It did not ensure all operations. It did not ensure the costs of retooling. It did not ensure for employees who were out because of COVID. It did not ensure the experience that Mr. Urban argued It did not ensure business models. There was no effort to underwrite the choices of menus or music or ambiance or the opportunity for socialization. And that's clear because we look at the policy and the terms of the policy. And this is in the appendix at 165. It's page 1 of 32. It's right under the coverage, A. It's A1. And it says covered property. And the covered property is buildings and business personal property. That's what the policy covers against physical loss or damage. Not air, not experience, not models of menus or choices of how food would be served. Secondly, Mr. Urban looks to a handful of decisions that address things like asbestos fibers or ammonia gas or gasoline permeating the floor of the building. Those cases are different. They involve something that happened physically to the building. And in those cases, the property was rendered completely uninhabitable by something affecting the building. That's not the case here. Colectivo's premises were not unusable. They were not uninhabitable. Space was usable and was used. The impact of COVID and the social distancing orders was a difference in how the space could be used. Colectivo continued to operate. The virus didn't physically alter its property. Its property did not become uninhabitable, and it wasn't dispossessed of the property altogether.
Your opposing counsel harkens us back to March of 2020. Seems like forever, doesn't it? But in March of 2020, so much was unknown, and there was a big emphasis on wearing gloves so that you didn't touch surfaces. For heaven's sakes, all the students were advised, as was everyone else, wash your hands with soap for at least 20 seconds. Do you know how long 20 seconds is? But that's what we were told, right? And hand sanitizer couldn't be found in those first several weeks. So of what import is turning us back to this temporary restoration? Because we're talking about, of course, you need coverage, but then coverage for what period of time? What does it cover? And he's arguing that vis-a-vis the temporary, I think, restoration. So what are your thoughts? Is that a viable argument as you see it?
So, Your Honor, I think there are two pieces to an answer to that question. One is that there actually is not an allegation of COVID on the premises. As I mentioned, the complaint itself says it doesn't seek a determination of COVID on the premises. And case after case across the country has concluded that these conclusory statements that air droplets or property surfaces are damaged is just an empty conclusion.
Yes, sir. I'm not talking about the actual physical damage, but I'm thinking of the language of the policy that deals with contamination and your production of products, so to speak.
So that contamination coverage is very specific, and when we look at it, we see that it requires actual contamination of the product or the premises of the insured, something we don't have, and it also contains that prohibition requirement that the insured be prohibited from access to the premises. Again, something that we don't have.
Access to premises or, and it was the production of product, the other side of the or that I was talking about.
Correct, or the production of the product. And here we don't have that either. In fact, there were some periods of time in which alcohol was permitted on takeout basis, and we have various changes to menus and to, you know, non-alcoholic cocktails that were offered by restaurants and businesses. And there are many, many regulations that may prohibit a bar from serving alcohol after 10 o'clock or, you know, hours of operation. Those are things that affect the use of the building, not the actual physical building or the actual physical product being contaminated in some way or affected in some way. I think that coverage is clearly on its terms in the policy. Not applicable, Your Honor. I see I have a red.
You do. Thank you. Have a seat.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your arguments and briefs. It's a very interesting case, and we will meet in conference in a little bit. I know some of my colleagues need a little bit of time before we do, and I'm going to come out and talk to the students. So I'll see you in a couple of minutes. Thank you.